In this lecture, we are going to look at the rules for computing capital gains on companies. A company pays corporation tax on capital gains arising on the disposal of chargeable assets. Basically, most capital assets are chargeable with a number of minor exceptions. The most important of these are cars. The definition of a car, however, does not extend to vans and other commercial vehicles, which will give rise to chargeable gains where they are sold at a profit.
Individuals pay a flat rate of capital gains tax at 18% or 28% depending on their total taxable income on disposals, whereas companies include gains as part of their taxable total profits and pay corporation tax at their marginal rate on those gains.
The rules for computing gains for companies are similar to the rules that apply to individuals. However, companies can claim indexation allowance, whereas individuals no longer can. And companies are not entitled to an annual exemption and are not eligible for entrepreneurs' relief. Let us look at a pro forma computation for the calculation of chargeable gains. We start off with the sales proceeds, from which we can deduct any incidental costs such as solicitors or surveyors' fees, etc. We then deduct the costs of the assets, which will also include any enhancement expenditure, together with any other incidental costs of acquisition, including legal fees and stamp duty paid. We will deal with this later on in this lecture. That gives us the calculation of the unindexed gain, that is simply the profit that we have made on disposing of this particular asset. We then deduct this item called indexation allowance, which is an allowance for inflation, and that finally gives us the indexed gain, which is the gain we subject to corporation tax. Let us look at an illustration.
Viscount Limited sells a factory for £1.2 million on the 30th of September 2010. The solicitor's fees amount to £2,000. The factory had been purchased in May 1994 at a cost of £350,000.
The capital gain will be computed as follows. First, we take the £1.2 million sale proceeds and deduct the incidental selling costs of £2,000, leaving net sales proceeds of £1.198 million. We then deduct the original cost of the factory of £350,000, giving an unindexed gain of £848,000.
We then deduct indexation allowance, which will take account of inflation arising between May 1994 and the date of sale.
We will assume, for simplicity, that the rate of inflation in that period is, say, 50%. The actual figure is computed using the increases in the retail price index, which we will look at in the next section. So, deducting the indexation allowance leaves us with an indexed gain of £673,000, and it is this that we subject to corporation tax. Let us take a look at indexation calculation. As I previously mentioned, the indexation factor is calculated by taking the movement in the retail price index between the date of acquisition of the asset and the date of sale. Where there is enhancement expenditure, we also look at the movement in the retail price index between the date the enhancement expenditure was incurred and the date of disposal. More about this later. Please review your tax tables which show the retail price index factors. It is these that we will be using in computing indexation in the next examples. The indexation factor is computed using the following formula. We take the retail price index at date of sale, less the retail price index at the date of acquisition, over the retail price index at acquisition. The result of this is rounded to 3 decimal places. Let us look at an illustration. In the last example, Viscount Limited, we assumed the indexation factor was 50%. Let us take a look at the correct indexation factor. Here we have the retail price indices, as taken from the accompanying tax tables.
The RPI in September 2010 is 227.9, and the RPI at May 1994, when the asset was purchased, was 144.7. This gives an indexation factor of 0.5749827. We round this to 3 decimal places to give an indexation factor of 0.575. The unindexed gain is £848,000. We then deduct indexation. The indexation allowance is the factor of 0.575 multiplied by the base cost of £350,000, giving £201,250. This leaves an index gain of £646,750, which will be subject to corporation tax.
On the screen, you will see that Cresta Limited purchased a warehouse in May 1990 for £425,000. The company incurred solicitors and surveyors' fees on this purchase amounting to £2,000 and paid stamp duty land tax, which was charged at 3% of the purchase cost.
The warehouse is sold in January 2011 for £1.5 million. Solicitors' fees of £3,000 were incurred on the sale. What I would like you to do is to calculate the index capital gain arising on this transaction.
Once you have computed the gain, insert the figure in the box provided and select Continue for an explanation. Let us now take a look at the solution. First of all, we bring in the gross proceeds of £1.5 million and deduct the incidental costs of sale, leaving us with net sale proceeds of £1.497 million. We then deduct the cost of the asset of £425,000. The incidental costs, which were the solicitors and surveyors' fees of £2,000, and stamp duty land tax, which is 3% of the purchase price of £425,000. So the total costs incurred to purchase this warehouse were £439,750. That gives us an unindexed gain of £1,057,250. Now we need to look at indexation. First, we calculate the indexation factor by looking at the RPI tables.
The index rises between May 1990 and January 2011. The RPI in January 2011 is 233.5, and the RPI in May 1990 was 126.2. Putting this into our formula gives us an indexation factor of 0.85. Applying this factor to the total cost of acquisition of the asset gives us an indexation allowance of £373,788. We deduct this indexation to give a chargeable gain of £683,462.
One other point in respect of indexation allowance. If the value of the RPI has fallen between acquisition and disposal, then indexation allowance is nil. Let us now look at enhancement expenditure. This is added to the base cost or allowable cost of the asset. It may need to be indexed separately if the enhancement occurs on a different date to the date of the acquisition of the asset.
Let us assume, in the bike out example, that the factory was extended in October 1998 at a cost of £200,000. Therefore, when it is sold, we are not only selling the original factory, but also the extension.
We bring in the proceeds of £1.2 million. For simplicity, I will ignore the incidental costs at this stage.
We deduct the original purchase cost of £350,000 incurred in May 1994 and also deduct the enhancement expenditure of £200,000 incurred in October 1998. That gives us an unindexed gain of £650,000. The indexation factor between May 1994 and September 2010, as previously calculated, is 0.575. That gives us indexation allowance on original cost of £201,250. We then need to index the enhancement expenditure on the extension from October 1998 up to September 2010. The indexation factor for this period is 0.385. Applying this to the enhancement expenditure gives us further indexation of £77,000. That leaves an index gain of £371,750.
Let us now look at capital losses. Capital losses are computed in the same way as capital gains, except that indexation cannot create or increase a capital loss. It can only reduce a gain to zero. Let us assume in the Viscount example that the asset was actually sold for just £400,000. We deduct the cost of £350,000, which gives us an unindexed gain of £50,000.
The indexation factor was 0.575, which gives us a maximum indexation allowance of £201,250.
However, the indexation is going to be restricted to just £50,000 to reduce the index gain to nil. Let us now assume that the asset was actually sold for just £250,000. Deducting the cost leaves us with a capital loss of £100,000, and no indexation is claimable as it cannot increase this loss. The capital loss may be utilized against capital gains in the same year, or carried forward against future chargeable gains. We must also be aware of the rules relating to assets purchased before the 31st of March 1982.
Where the asset was originally acquired before the 31st of March 1982, we are required to do an additional calculation to compute the capital gains and losses for companies. These additional rules were introduced in April 1988, when the government introduced rebasing provisions allowing companies to revalue their assets at the 31st of March 1982 and recompute gains from that point forward only. The additional calculation starts in the same place, i.e. with sales proceeds. However, instead of deducting original cost, we deduct the value of the asset as at the 31st of March 1982. In effect, we are pretending that we bought the asset on the 31st of March 1982 for its value at that date. This gives us the gross gain from which we can deduct indexation allowance to arrive at the index gain. We compare this calculation based on the value of the asset at the 31st of March 1982 with the normal capital gain calculation based on cost.
Consequently, if the value of the asset has risen from the time of purchase to March 1982, it will be advantageous to use the March 1982 value. We will be required to prepare two calculations, one based on cost and one based on the March 1982 value. Where this produces two gains, we take the lower gain, which is good news for the taxpayer. If this gives us two losses, we take the lower loss, which is not so good because obviously we would like to have losses as high as possible. Where we produce one gain and one loss, the answer will be zero, so there are no winners and no losers. Note that the indexation allowance only runs from March 1982 and is based on the higher of the cost or March 1982 value.
It is possible for companies to make a global rebasing election. A global rebasing election means that the company will elect for all capital gains on pre-1982 assets to be calculated by reference to the March 1982 value instead of cost. This means that only one calculation will be performed, that being the one using the March 1982 value. A global rebasing election is irrevocable and applies to all assets held by the company at the 31st of March 1982. The election must be in writing, and the time limit for the election is 2 years from the end of the first chargeable accounting period in which a pre-1982 asset is sold. For most companies, this time limit is likely to have already been passed. The main advantage for making a global rebasing election is for convenience of administration, i.e., it takes away the need for the company to ascertain the original acquisition cost. A rebasing election can also give a company access to higher capital losses. Let us illustrate this with a worked example.
Ventura Limited purchased a factory in June 1970 for £80,000. It was worth £170,000 on the 31st of March 1982. The company sold the factory in September 2010 for £550,000. Let us first build the cost calculation. We bring in proceeds of £550,000, deduct the cost of £80,000, giving us an unindexed gain of £470,000. We then do the same for the March 1982 calculation. We deduct the March 1982 value of £170,000, giving an unindexed gain of £380,000. We now look at the indexation factor. Indexation can only run from March 1982 at the very earliest and will run through until September 2010 when the factory is sold. The RPI for September 2010 is 227.9. The March 1982 RPI is 79.44. This gives an index rise of 1.869. We apply the indexation to the higher of cost and March 1982 value. We therefore index the March 1982 value of £170,000 at 1.869, giving us indexation in both columns of £317,730. The index gain in the cost column is £152,270. The index gain in the 1982 column is £62,270. We take the lower of these gains and duly charge £62,270 to corporation tax. Let us say that instead the asset was sold for £450,000. How would this affect the figures? As we can see, this will reduce the gain based on cost to £52,270 and reduces the March 1982 gain to nil. The indexation here is restricted because it cannot create a loss.
As we take the lower of the two gains, the result will be nil. Let us look briefly at the rollover relief rules. Where a company sells one eligible asset and purchases another eligible asset within a specified period, the gain on the sale of asset 1 can be deducted from the base cost of asset 2, upon the company making a suitable election. This will obviously ensure that the company does not pay corporation tax on the sale of the first asset.
The effect of the rollover relief claim is to defer the gain on the sale of asset 1. By reducing the base cost of asset 2, a larger gain will arise on its subsequent sale.
These rules only apply when the company is actually selling assets used for the purposes of a trade. What the government is keen to encourage is companies reinvesting in their trading activities without having to pay corporation tax on gains along the way. So what are these eligible assets? They include land and buildings, provided it is used for the purposes of the trade, goodwill, and fixed plant and machinery. Goodwill bought or created after the 1st of April 2002 will not be within the CGT rules, as explained in the chapter on intangible fixed assets.
In addition, goodwill that is within the capital gains tax rules can only be rolled over into an intangible fixed asset.
Fixed plant here means that it is in some way bolted to the floor or the building. The specified period is the period 1 year before the disposal of asset 1 to 3 years afterwards.